This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special Christmas edition of the program. Of all the 500 plus episodes of this show accessible online at hometownheroesradio.com, one of the ones that's listened to the most is from 5 years ago with an ex-prisoner of war named Leonard Cosby. I periodically hear from folks who have encountered Mr. Cosby at stores in the vicinity of his home in California. He invites these random strangers to listen to that podcast so they can learn a little bit about World War II and particularly the POW experience. Mr. Cosby had joined the Army with his twin brother, but they had been separated. And as you settle in next to a toasty fire on Christmas Eve, imagine yourself where Leonard was on Christmas Eve 1944, manning a roadblock on the perimeter of the Battle of the Bulge.
Some German soldiers sneaked up and started shooting at us. They couldn't get a direct shot into where we were, so they were shooting at an angle. And on our right side was a wooden, kind of like a garage, where they had parked something inside the garage. This German was shooting at us. They had some tracer bullets in with their ammunition, and the tracer bullet would hit the side of this wooden garage and stick there and fry. They didn't last long, just a few seconds, and they went out. That was the only time they came up there attempting to shoot us or shoot at us. And to this day, I can't understand why they didn't throw a hand grenade or something in there at us.
You're not complaining that they didn't?
Oh, no. No, fortunately, fortunately, I made it through it in fine shape.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's additional vehicles coming up the road, so we had two bazooka shells. We had already used one, so now it's time to use the other one. And I moved up on the ridge and loaded the bazooka gun and fired it. And when a bazooka shell hits metal, out the other side of the metal will be flying molting metal. And when I fired the bazooka gun, I could hear some German soldiers down there screaming and hollering. And after that, we didn't hear much of anything from them. There was no firing at us or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that must have been about, maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
And how many people are with you here?
There's 3 of us in that roadblock.
Three of us. So this is not a well-fortified position. You don't have a lot of reinforcements. You guys are out there on your own.
Right. And there's really not much of anything around us to protect us either.
And you have no idea how many Germans are out there.
No.
So it's 3 in the morning.
And one of the fellows became excited, and I guess he was a little bit hysterical. He said, we're going to have to do something. It's going to be daylight here before you know it. And when it gets light, the Germans are going to come in here and kill us all. He said, we're going to have to give up. And I said, that might be all right. But I said, who's going to walk out in the middle of the road to give up?
Mm-hmm.
And I was standing down near the front of our position there, and this guy just pushed me right out in the middle of the road. So I started yelling, comrade, comrade.
And this is about daybreak or what?
Well, I'd say it's about 3 o'clock or 3:30 in the morning.
So you didn't want to wait till the sun came up?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, he was afraid that they would come in there and tear us to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, I don't know why the Germans didn't start shooting, but they took all 3 of us as prisoners and took us down to a German officer who questioned us as to what organization we were in, what unit we were in, and how long we had been there.
Not very long.
No.
Didn't have much to tell them, did you? Not that you would have anyway.
No. Well, I'm sure they knew mm-hmm. the organization we were in, what division and all.
Emotionally, what was that like? Because here you have put in all this time and training, not to mention your brother going in with you, and you're going over there to win a war. And now all of a sudden, you've had this intense experience where you didn't know if you were going to die, and here you are surrendering, not knowing what the future holds. That seems like an awful lot to try to process in a 19-year-old brain.
Well, I didn't know what to expect from the Germans or where they would take us, but they had us marching for a ways, and then they put us on trucks and hauled us back into Germany.
You can hear the rest of Mr. Cosby's story at hometownheroesradio.com, and the same goes for the rest of the veterans you're hearing from today. If you ever have the chance to visit the Veterans Memorial Museum, home of the Legion of Valor in Fresno, California, in the Prisoner of War room there, you'll find some memorabilia from Judge Frank Creed Jr., who never would have become a judge if he didn't survive World War II and the months he spent as a prisoner of war. You'll hear about what Christmas Day 1944 brought his way, but let's pick his story up at the start of the Battle of the Bulge with the 106th Infantry Division.
They said, "Don't shoot when the Germans come in," and I thought some Germans were surrendering to us. And then they said, "Break your weapons." So I knew then that it was the other way around. But you really can't get a total perspective of what's going on. You only know what you can see and where you are, and when you're in the Ardennes Forest and the Schnee Eifel Mountains, you don't have any broad amount of visibility, and you just, it's forest and a lot of trees. After they said don't shoot when the Germans come in, why, the German officer gave us instructions to just come out of the forest and into a clearing. There were several thousand at that time. And altogether, two regiments, about 10,000 men, were surrendered to the Germans because we had very little ammunition left, no food, no water, and our officers surrendered us. I mean, I didn't have to make a decision, and I was ordered to do it. And some did try to take off into the forest, but one thing they tell you in the military, two things. Number one, don't fall asleep on guard duty, and two, always obey orders. When they have that pounded into your head, why, you do it.
And it probably saved your life.
Well, that's right. Our colonels surrendered us to the two regiments of the 106th Division and several thousand others to the regular German army. And they, I'll say this, they, at least my own experience was that they treated us like soldiers, and the SS, fortunately, were to the north of us, so we didn't have to deal with them. It was a regular German army, and they were professional.
And you just so happened to arrive at this POW camp, Stalag 9B, on?
Christmas Day of 1944.
When you get to that day every year, when you celebrate Christmas with your family, do you think about that?
I think of it all the time. I think some of the family members don't want to hear about it anymore. They've heard too much about it already. You don't know what the future is going to hold for you, but you know that you're still alive. The one thing I certainly learned is you never judge people by superficial values, which has helped me throughout my career and my occupation. And I think that more of us can profit from that, because we do tend to sometimes judge people by superficial values, because you don't know who the heroes are. You don't know the one who's going to lay down their life for you until you're tested.
Words of wisdom from the late Frank Creed. Find his entire interview at hometownheroesradio.com, where you can also access this account from another member of the 106th Infantry Division. He was also part of that mass surrender, but Mac McMullen might never have made it to a POW camp if he didn't experience his own personal Christmas miracle.
I went to church and Sunday school and all that, but I was one of these guys that prayed for a bicycle or something like that, and I just... I was holding back saving that, I guess. I didn't know it. But I prayed that just give me one more half mile. Just give me one more half mile. And then there was I got to where I was. I was getting ready to drop out. And somebody I don't know, never saw him before. I've never seen him since. He was a big guy. He grabbed me by, put it on his shoulder or arm. And he helped me. And with him and some other help, I got there through the night, and the next day, but that was tough because I couldn't. I was ready to drop out. I just couldn't go anymore.
And for our listeners, tell us what that would have meant if you would have dropped out? You would have been left for dead, or
they might shoot me, or to make sure I wasn't playing games with them. And no, they did not have frozen. My feet were already frozen. I couldn't go anywhere.
You know? So you thought that was it?
Yep, that was as close as I've ever come.
And a desperate prayer was answered in a big, strapping fellow American who, and who knows? Who knows who he was, huh?
No, I don't know. Never saw him. It was in the middle of the night. I didn't ask him. He saw me stumbling and heading for the edge of the column and grabbed me and says, hang in there.
And I've had so many prisoners of war repeat to me the POW motto of we help those who can't help themselves. And there was someone who helped you when you couldn't help yourself. How many times over the years have you thought back to that when someone needed help from you?
I've been there.
And I can tell it's still powerful for you, and I certainly understand why. So you made it through that night.
We worked all that night, and then the next day, and then they finally let us stop. They give us a rest. And then some of us were in a schoolhouse, some of us were in a church, a barn, whatever. Because there wasn't any facilities, it was just where you could flop.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent that night there. And then the next day, we were in a little town called Gerolstein, Gerolstein, something like that. And they loaded us on boxcars at that time.
And this is the famous 40 and 8?
Mm-hmm.
40 people or 8 horses, but I'm sure they stuck a lot more than 40 in there.
60.
Uh-huh.
You couldn't, you sat down with your knees up, and then the guy got behind you and his back to yours were the same. And if you got into that position, everybody got in that position, you could all sit down at one time. Otherwise, you couldn't.
And you probably needed that for some body heat, too, right?
The heat came from the manure that was in the boxcar. There was about 8-10 inches of manure in the boxcar. And us city boys didn't know how many BTUs there were on a pound of horse manure. but it was because the next day, couple guys, when they would let us out to relieve ourselves, and there was no water, so we'd be eating some snow. And a couple of them asked if they could shovel this stuff out, the manure out. Well, man, when you that part where the car where these jokers got rid of the manure was frozen just like the.
Never thought you'd be wishing for horse manure.
No,
huh?
No.
And this sounds like a miserable existence. I mean, certainly the uncertainty could eat you alive, if not the freezing temperatures and just the agony of really not having any sustenance.
We hadn't eaten. When we got captured, we hadn't eaten for 2 days. They just had to bring the chow up to us because when we were by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Jeep didn't get there for 2 days before we were captured. Mm-hmm. So we still didn't have anything to eat. I guess it would be the second day, they give us a loaf of bread for 5 guys, one of their brown breads that we make out of
sawdust. Tree flour.
Yeah.
I trust you'll be feasting on something much more significant this Christmas, and after that perspective from the late Mac McMullen, I know you're going to be thankful for it. We've heard about some of the awful things encountered during the Battle of the Bulge and that Christmas season of 1944, but we're going to shift our focus when we come back. A 97-year-old who in one particular part of the world might even be more popular than Santa Claus. We'll meet the candy bomber of the Berlin Airlift when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. Nearly 1,000 veterans have gotten to see their memorials for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.